Good afternoon, Don. Could you state your name and who you represent for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Don Rouleau with the District Council of Labor, and also today, speaking on behalf of the State Health and OCO. We do support legislation such as this, disregarding the constitutional as right now.
We should have got it stuff ready for it.
But we do support this. I suspect we'll have some agencies saying it is a cost factor to their agencies. I think the advantages of this legislation will are much greater than the disadvantages that the agencies might have. I think we've got to consider strongly the benefits for the large and small Alaskan firms, the suppliers, whereas a Alaska contractor will be prone to use suppliers from the state. And right along those lines, also, not all Alaskan contractors use resident hire, but they'd be more prone to use Alaskans. And so therefore, you've got a cross-section of the economy that's going to be stimulated, and it'll benefit all Alaskans. So we are definitely in support of this. The constitutional problems that were addressed by the Department of Law, and we appreciate what he has to say, it seems like 34 other states have this on the books, and it's hard for me to believe why it's not challenged. I would like, there's got to be some reasons for it. Somebody's got to be out there. We're not the only ones with contracts that are high that haven't been challenged. What is the reason? And I think we've got to know that, because I don't like to see this legislation be held up just because two of the judges in the North Face Irby case are expressing their opinions. I don't think we should be scared away from it by any means. And as Red Boucher's local hire law, we're not sure if that's constitutional, but let's get it on the books best we can, and then everyone will benefit up to until time is challenged and may be found unconstitutional.
Representative Knock.
Yes, and Don, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that we do have to look at this legislation is some of the things that maybe we are involved with at the state level that possibly on the private side we have to look at, and you know, it's not reflected in a fiscal note or what, but like Gary was mentioning during his testimony is the fact, in some reality out there, what is the conjecture, or if challenged, and there's a high likelihood that it could be challenged, what is it going to cost the state to defend the case, you know? And these are the sure things that we look at on the private side, you know, and you know, you have to know when to hold them and when to fold them. And, you know, these dollars, I've been involved in cases, you know, and you know, you get the speculation that, hey, you know, you've got a chance to win, so it costs you 50 grand, you know, you balance these things out.
We have a genuine concern there, too.
So, you know, as makers of laws and all this stuff, we do have responsibilities, too, not to get the state into a whirlwind thing that's going to cost us a fortune.
Are there any further questions, Mr. Rouleau?
I'd like to make one more comment on there's been a lot of horror stories on the North Face Irby job. It was challenged for, not because a bit of preference was there, but because one of the partners had hooked up with a small Alaskan firm, which has happened in this state before, and that's why the joint venture language became law a couple of years ago, to prevent large outfits coming into the state, joint venturing to enjoy the bit of preference that's on the books now. And when they enjoy that, they get the bid, and the partner really has no assets, but he has an Alaska license, and that's why the joint venture language is instituted in the first place, to prevent these, Harrison West is another example on the hydroelectric dam. Very small outfit was joint ventured by them, and a month later, there was no small partner anymore, but that contractor did enjoy the bidder's preference at the expense of the Alaskan people.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Thank you. Rouleau. Thank you for your testimony. Becky Bear?
I'm Becky Barron. I'm the legislative liaison to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, which you have probably noticed from your package. We do not have a formal position paper in, and one of the things we wanted to wait for was the Attorney General's opinion. At the gut level, we are in favor of those things that will help to stimulate the Bascom economy. And although we realize that there will be a cost statement from the increased cost of contracting, we also know that money that stays in the Alaska economy circulates around multiple times and helps to stimulate the Alaskan economy, and that there is a good public policy reason then for doing those things. As the gentleman before me said, we're not the only state with a preference. In fact, the state of Washington is so threatened by that that they discount bids from out-of-state bidders by the amount of bidder preference that that state allows, and they publish the list of exactly how much you discount each of those. And actually, we're one of the low ones. There's 12 and 14 and 15 percent out there in other states, and those are lower 48 states that do not have the high cost of doing business as we do. So to that extent, I'm just as confused as he does as to why it is that we've got to be more angelic about these things than the rest of the states of the Union. We also feel, and I made this point when we were doing product preference, that the biggest single thing that needs to happen right now is incubation of Alaskan businesses. One of the reasons we argued for product preferences is because oftentimes Alaskan businesses cannot get the contracts to give them the economy of scale to become large enough to then be able to effect cost reductions that allow them to compete at the lower price. And the argument that we made at that time, which I think is the argument that I'll make at this time, is it's going to take 2 or 3 years for a court challenge to go through anyway, and during that time it does give Alaskan businesses a chance to try and affect the economy of scale. We did have two possible amendments. We felt that, as Mr. Amendola pointed out, Alaska residents needed a definition, and we suggest that you use the same definition that you use in terms of the permanent fund, which is a six-month resident, to be consistent with your permanent place of business for 6 months. We also support the idea of increasing the percentage of ownership, and I know that you're concerned about excluding businesses, but the truth of the matter is this whole bill is a matter of defining who an Alaska bidder is. And if we're going to define who an Alaska bidder is, we can't go around making it the most inclusive definition of Alaskan bidder. At the present time, there are major national companies that are, quote, Alaskan bidders for the simple reason that they hold Alaska business license. And they're taking advantage of that 5%. It's certainly something that I got to fight with when I was in the private sector and bidding against people who were based all over the place, but they held the Alaska business license. They would hire a person in one town on a very part-time basis, maybe 5 or 10 hours a week, have themselves a small hole in the wall office, and by golly, they were an Alaska bidder, and they got every benefit that I got, even though I lived here and, you know, had to pay off everything as it was. We would like to see that increase to 50%. We think that's a very reasonable figure for a company that's less than a $1 million company. Small business is the largest single employer in the state of Alaska. By federal definitions, almost every business we have in the state of Alaska is a small business. And this is more restrictive than what the national level small business is, but it's more reflective of what we have in the state of Alaska. And the majority of those small businesses are employers of less than 10 people. And they are Alaskan businesses hiring Alaskans. And by bringing it up to 50%, you are therefore, again, really targeting those businesses. I guess you'd call them ma and pa, but I think business has got a little bit more sophisticated than that, which are the ones that we really do need to assist. So on those reasons, with raising that and with coming with a better definition of Alaska residents, we feel that the bill probably is a very good way to go. And in light of the Attorney General's opinion there, I will give you a position paper from the department.
Thank you, Ms. Weir. There was another proposal that had been discussed, I'm not certain if it came from your department or not, about a possible sunset provision.
Yeah, one of the suggestions I had is we do go into a sunset provision, and I think our emphasis has been on this incubation. If this goes on forever and ever, we basically get to a point that Alaskan businesses can grow. They can become competitive, but they can also always write the contract up for 10 or 15% above because they know that they're going to come in. And I think the biggest single thing we have to do is get to that economy of scale. And personally, I would say, and I think the department would say also, that within 10 years, Alaskan businesses should be able to do that. And so a sunset might make it more palatable, and also may help us in terms of court cases.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Baer? There Representative Boucher.
Just the thought, once again, and I go back to the larger picture. I, you know, in really taking a look and listening to Alaska Hire or whatever we want to call it, I really felt that we have never really developed a case. We kind of, I recall Governor Eakin saying, "Hang the dam, put it on the books, and we'll fight it in the court." And we've said that so often, I had hoped at one time that some legal branch would sit down and arrive at a definition that was fair to everybody, because Alaska isn't Oklahoma, where you just move across the border, and I realize there's certain constraints. But once again, I see the same old reasons being brought up, and obviously, and let's face it, it's a highly emotional issue in Alaska and down times, but I don't see any imagination here and that deals with the state of Alaska and its uniqueness. We keep saying it's unique, but there ought to be something out there that's unique that allows a small sawmill to be able to sell its lumber to the city. I think everybody would agree to that, that we can't have we can't have Alaska Timber compete with Douglas Fir. There are a lot of injustices out there. I realize an overaction is also an injustice. But there's got to be something that we can build this on to where it's not a sin to help Alaska businesses come along. And that includes, as far as I'm concerned, the difference between a Huffman Construction Company getting a job to construct the Seward Prison in San Juan. I realize that may not be a good Pacific Rim neighbor. And that, of course, was a losing battle. But I'm just hoping that somewhere in this there can be a little bit of common sense shed on this issue. Maybe this is the bill to do it on.
Mr. Chairman, part of the problem is that we have three separate issues there. We have the issue of service industries and Alaska Hire. Once you get the contract, using Alaska residents. You have, in going back to your thing about Douglas hem fir and Alaska spruce, you have historical buying patterns. You know, many people who've been in the state for a long time know conventionally that if you're going to save money, you're going to go to Seattle. They know that. Whether it's true or not, they know it. And so therefore, their habit is to ask for or do what they always did before. That part, you know, is the part that I think we can kind of fight, and that's working with the purchasing agents of the state and pointing out to them that it is on the books that they are going to buy Alaska. The part about the small sawmills, we do get into the problem of the economy of scale, and that's because they have not been able to bid on the big contracts, and that's where that incubation I talked to on product preference, I think, will assist. On terms of resident hire, I don't know. I have never quite understood why we don't hire our own. And that's the one I find most confusing. And I'm not exactly sure how we approach it, because we again keep running into that thing. If, for instance, we were to come down with a constitutional amendment, we'll say, hey, you know, the court has to abide by this because we will hire Alaskans, then we're going to get a Zobel, so we're going to go to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court's going to say to us, hey, Alaska, you're part of the United States, and you can't interfere with trade. So I don't know how you solve that.
The chair, before submitting this legislation, spent some time consulting the record over the last year when this legislation did pass the House and the Senate, and taking suggestions from people who are involved in that process about what additional things should be included in this legislation. So I made an attempt to add those kind of concerns into this legislation, and I see that we still have the potential to make it a much better bill than did pass last year. And that's what I really hope the committee can work on over the next few weeks, is trying to make this as good a bill as it can be, and to possibly narrow its scope because even if simply Section 3 was to pass with some refinements, it would be a large advancement for Alaskan businesses. So the chair is very open to suggestions, and my intent would be to continue to have work sessions on this legislation, take testimony statewide, and further develop the record from last year until we have a piece of legislation that we're fairly confident with and seems to best address the concerns that have been put forth by the people. Is there any further questions of Ms. Baer? Thank you. Well, since we've lost Representative Bernard, it's probably time to close the meeting unless there's any additional testimony from members of the audience. So Representative Furness?
Maybe just one final comment, Mr. Chairman. We've heard a number of people voice some frustration as to why we can't do things, and I share that frustration. However, over the last 5 years, and this being the fifth year, a number of things have come quite clear dealing with local hiring preferences and whatever. I believe that the roadmap is there, but we seem to take somewhat of a shotgun approach in approaching it and assimilating all the data. There are a couple of things that come through loud and clear. The courts have held a number of points. One, that we must show that outside employment creates a peculiar source of evil. We must clearly document that. In the Wyoming court, for example, one of the findings, and they refer specifically to Alaska, that we must document the sources of unemployment and underemployment of Native Alaskans as one of the tests we should clearly document. Now, you spoke of narrowing the scope. It appears here that we address at least some of the findings of prior court decisions supporting the peculiar source of evil, the unemployment, certain sectors in our communities, clearly document the displacement that it creates, and then further define it by looking at the market participant doctrine within our state. It appears that if we meet those tests very narrowly, we should be able to come up with something that's summable. And it appears to me that we really have not zeroed in our efforts sufficient to provide the sufficient documentation to do it. And each time we go to the courts, we're not totally prepared, looking at all of the avenues, and we get shot out. So,
Representative Ferguson, Mr. Chairspin, your remarks are right on, and that's what the efforts of Representative Boucher have been so wonderful at the last 2 years, is for the first time developing that body of data to justify this type of legislation. And we have come immense leaps and bounds since the 1985 case, the Francis case, which was cited in 86, but it was based on data that was available from 83. And since that time, we've had considerable progress in that area, and we hope that it may just be the progress we need to find a constitutional justification. And we're really looking forward to this social ills compilation of data over this next year. That could be the key nut that all this hinges on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's what I was candidly as one who pushed hard for that legislation, and even more important, the beginning of the study. That was, to me, what it was all about. That's why I hung on and fought for that. I'm kind of disappointed with the Department of Labor not having approached that first. I mean, for you to ask the questions, well, are they going to do it if there's another $300,000? I, for one, want to call the department in here and find out exactly how they spent that $300,000. Because I tend to look like that you said it, the 85 study was a warmed over 85 study, study B. And some of the feedback that I'm getting is that in the last months of this summer, there were a few questionnaires circulated around. So I want to know exactly who they called on that thing. That was a lot of money that was spent. And I'm not satisfied that that was done right. And I sure had my neck out on the line to get the money for them on the thing. And I think that it's nothing but a warmed over version of the other. I could tell you were slightly dissatisfied. It isn't dealing with what we were talking about. And I'd like to have the department in here, and I want to know just exactly how they went. Who did they question? Because you can ask lots of questions for $300,000.
Representative Boucher, I certainly agree with you. I was hoping that we'd be in a place by January of 87 to see whether there would be certain areas where we could implement the law, as at least for send up a trial balloon in those areas, and I'm very disappointed also. Now their projection in that study is 88, January of 88, and I'm also concerned that not enough work was done on the social ills aspect, which is a very important connection there to unemployment, and I think this committee is going to spend a lot of time pursuing and dogging that issue, making sure that gets done.
Can we get the department over here and find out what they actually did?
I already asked them about that, and I think they're trying to figure out what they did, and we're going to keep on them until we get some answers.
Good.
We have one witness out there that would like to testify, Jim Clark.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Clark. I represent the Alaska Loggers Association, and I know you're getting close to closing, and I don't want to take up a lot of time other than to say that we commend the chair for the bill, we commend the committee for its hard work over the last several years in this issue, and commend the Department of Commerce and Becky Bear for the hard work she's been doing. You've said that this is an ongoing process and involves some work. We have had the only point I make is with the timber industry, we've had a product preference bill on the books since 1949. It was always honored in the breach, never enforced. And some of the things we'd be looking for, certainly will, I think we can be of some help in compiling some of the horror stories of how we've barely missed in competition with folks from the lower 48 that brought products in past Alaska Timber and sold it in state projects. And Becky Bear is exactly on her point about the need for an incubation period to do things like get in enough economies of scale to put in dry kilns, and then we can sell our lumbers, fine construction lumber used in the Far East but not used in Alaska. These are the kinds of things that I think we can do with just the kinds of things that we discussed here today. We'll be fully cooperative with the committee in compiling some of this information. We'll try to come forward with some creative ideas, but I just wanted to take this occasion to say we really appreciate the efforts of the committee and look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Are there any questions of Mr. Clark? Are there any further comments from members of the committee before we adjourn? Seeing none, the meeting of Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 4:37. 3:37.